Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Tom, if ever we needed you on this program, this is the time. Welcome back.
Nice to be back, Alan.
Well, it's terrific to see you. I want to start with my own pet peeve. You'll be nicey-nicey like you always are, but I don't say it anyway.
It's Thanksgiving week, Alan. Come on.
Yeah, well, there is that. And there are plenty of turkeys around. I couldn't help it. I'm sorry. So here's the deal. You're the comptroller of the state of New York. You're supposed to be looking at contracts before and while they're being let so that we know that we're being protected. And I have to say this, although it's probably a word that may get beat by our producer, David Gustina, you do a damn good job of it. And I'm very concerned because one of the things that this governor did, Andrew Cuomo, was to take, and using the legislature and the budget process, taking away from you the right to pre-look at some and pre-audit some of the contracts that have been let around here. If you had been allowed to do that, then the mess that Cuomo and his pals are in right now might not have ever happened. Am I wrong?
Well, it's possible you're correct. I mean, you know, we...
Possible means that you are correct. You're just being Mr. Nicey-Nicey.
Well, I think the overall point is that the comptroller's office in New York is set up uniquely to be independent fiscal watchdog, to review the fiscal affairs of the state with a view towards protecting the taxpayer interests. That's why it's independently elected. That's why we're set up the way we're set up.
It's in the Constitution.
Well, and it's in New York state law. Yeah, the overall purpose of the office is certainly in the Constitution, but... As you point out, a few years ago, the legislature, at the recommendation of the governor, took away some of that ability to review contracts. And one of the arguments was, well, they could always audit after the fact if there's a problem. Well, after the fact doesn't prevent a problem from happening. And when you audit something and say, well, you know, it shouldn't have happened, that doesn't change anything. Number one. Number two, it was also said that in the interest of efficiency, we need to take away this level of oversight. Well, you know, I've always challenged the notion that the comptroller's office's reviews create inefficiency. It's really there to protect taxpayer value. And in fact, we do a very fast turnaround on contract review and approval. So with a number of SUNY contracts, with these large centralized contracts that are let through the Office of General Services, we no longer have the statutory authority to review that we had before. The charges, you know, the allegations that came out of Prepahara's office raise serious questions about how money is funneled in the state. If we had more review, could we have perhaps stopped it? Maybe, but I don't know for a fact that that's the case. At the very least, folks would have known someone outside of the administration was looking, and it might have prevented the temptation for people to think that they could get away with what allegedly is bid rigging and people enriching themselves.
Well, you say so, allegedly, but one of the two who have been accused has already pleaded guilty. The other one is the alleged brother of Andrew Cuomo. He calls him his brother and the one that his father liked the most. So this is pretty close to home.
Well, and big contributors, you know, in terms of the contractors. Look, we need to have a top-to-bottom review of procurement practices we have in the state. Part of that, I think, has to start with restoring the authority from our office for this oversight that was taken away. But I really think we need to
have
look
you heard
more
from
broad.
Wait. Yep. Have you heard from anybody in the legislature?
Oh, lots. Oh,
Tom,
several.
We did
yes.
the wrong thing.
Yes.
We shouldn't
yes.
have rolled over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, a number have called. And some have said it publicly. Now, what happens in January when everybody's back? You know, look what happens. I don't have a seat at the table as part of the legislative process. There are all kinds of trades that go on over a lot of issues. So I'm not naive, you know, people who are now calling me up and saying, we want to correct this, what they're going to say in January. I don't know. I hope they do, because we need to protect the taxpayer interest in this area. And I think the other thing we need to look at, Alan, is look at these nonprofit entities that were set up as part of this arrangement. So you had money going to SUNY, then some of the money goes to Empire State Development, then it goes to these nonprofits, Fuller Roads, Fort Schuyler. These are the entities that, you know, part of the Nano Project here in Albany, Buffalo
Billion. By the way, the Nano Project, Elaine Calieros,
yep.
He has been arrested on state and federal charges
yep.
also. So
yep.
Your point is quite...
Well, but see, with these nonprofit entities, there's really no accountability. And I think you really need to ask the question, should you have any money going through these nonprofits at all? You know, one of the things I've suggested is maybe we need to eliminate totally that layer, that opaque layer, where money needs to really be on the books. We need to have transparency. The only way you're going to have real accountability, and as we've often said, the best disinfectant, right? You've heard it over many years, not me the first one to say it, is sunlight. Mm. Well, you need to get back to transparency. So when you have monies flowing through these various levels without the review of the controller's office and then into these nonprofits that are really set up, quote unquote, to be efficient, but really meant to be in the shadows, well, gee, what a surprise. People are going to try to take advantage, and including very smart people. Like, Calieris had a great reputation in this part of the state, right? He did a lot to put, the whole nano industry on the map and really build up, the SUNY role in that. But there obviously was another side to all of this that's being exposed right now. Raises a lot of questions, and I don't think it'll make it less efficient. Even if it may take a little bit longer to get some of these approvals, let's do it right. Because take the Buffalo Billion, and most people acknowledge Buffalo needed the help. But if along the way, certain contractors were getting favoritism in terms of the bids, if certain people who had been in the administration were putting money in their pocket, as is alleged, well, that's not acceptable. If there was a good economic development goal at the end, that doesn't justify people getting favored contracts or people in state government or close to the administration lining their own pockets.
Yeah, but Tom, it doesn't stop there. The chutzpah factor should be considered. Which
translate.
Is, well, chutzpah means unbelievable.
I'm a dance day guy, I understand.
Unbelievable gall, right. Like the orphan who kills his parents and then asks for leniency because he's an orphan. but the chutzpah factor is that instead of giving you back the very power which was taken away from you, which would have prevented some of this, I think, the governor now says, okay, now I'm going to appoint a purchaser general to make sure that the purchases we do are all kosher. So that's crazy. That's crazy. Give the man, Tom DiNapoli, and the office back the powers you took away from him so that he would not be able to find this kind of stuff.
No, look, I mean, the key thing is we'll take Tom DiNapoli out of the, although he's a mensch, we'll take that out of the equation, yeah. Keep with the language. The controller's office is set up. Whoever the governor is, whoever the controller is, it's meant to be the independent voice. It's meant to be the independent watchdog, accountable to the people of the state of New York, not appointed by the governor, not accountable to the legislature in that sense. That level of independent oversight is what's been lacking. And you're absolutely right. I think it's great, in the essay the governor wrote the other day to say we need to really look at this carefully. We need to do all we can to deal with the corruption issue. But to have it all housed within the administration and to be appointed by the administration, that is not an independent review, no matter how good that individual may be, who we may appoint to be the chief procurement officer. And if you're worried about efficiency, to kind of have someone do the work that we're already set up to do, and it's not, as I read what he is proposing, and we don't know the details, it's not taking away the role that we have that hasn't been taken away. It just sounds to me like we really just need to get back to the basics. Put state spending and where state money is going back on the books. Don't use these nonprofit shadow entities anymore for the way the money goes. We really need to look at not just SUNY, but all the authorities where there's so much spending and borrowing that happens that is beyond what normally you do for any regular state agency. And make sure the controller's office, the independent office, is providing that independent oversight so that no one can look and say, well, I'm part of the, as seems to have happened, again, allegations, we'll see what plays out. No one within the administration could say, well, we're all controlling this. No one else is looking. We can get away with something. In the long run, it's the best for whoever the governor is to have an independent validator that the procedures that are being followed and the policies are appropriate, the taxpayer interests are being followed. At the end of the day, it protects an administration from running into trouble.
Now, Tom DiNapoli, I think you're a great guy, and I think you're one of the best public servants I've ever seen in my whole life. And this whole thing gets me infuriated and crazy. But I did want to ask you one question.
Yeah.
You can answer me yes or no. If Andrew Cuomo decides not to run for a third term, would you run for governor?
As I've said before on your show, I love being the controller of the state of New York.
Yeah.
Hopefully with certain powers of prerogatives restored by next year. And my plan is to run for re-election. And speculation about what either the governor's doing, and he's indicated he's running for governor again.
Yes, he is.
And I've indicated I'm running for controller. I think as we close out 2016, I think the expectation is he's running for governor, I'm running for controller.
But if he decides at the last minute not to, would you be a candidate?
Well, it's nice that people ask that question, but I don't expect that eventuality to happen, so I'm not going to deal in the hypotheticals right now.
I'm so surprised. Okay, the state legislature does not think it's being paid enough. You used to be a state legislator, and their salaries haven't increased for a long, long time.
19 years, I think, yeah.
Now, Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, I should say, I want to be respectful. Governor Cuomo has appointed a commission which would deal with whether they get a raise or not. The Cuomo Commission has said, no, you don't get a raise. Now, they can come back and decide, because people hate the idea of giving these guys a raise, that they deserve a raise. They can raise their own salaries. The question to you, Tom DiNapoli, is what do you make of this whole mess?
Well, it has become somewhat of a mess, hasn't it? And I think the idea of a commission similar to what they did for judicial salaries to look objectively about what, you know, what would be an appropriate compensation level was probably a good idea. However, it seems to got bollocked up with all the politics and other issues.
Meaning that Cuomo appoints them and then he tells them what to do.
Well, look, there's no doubt that we've had a lot of folks in the legislature that have done some bad things. We know that. We've talked about it.
Sure.
Some of not well-known and some, you know, of leadership level. Most of the legislators are actually doing an honest job and working very hard.
Sure.
I don't think it's unreasonable for us to look at the compensation level. I personally have always felt, do it as part of the budget process. Do it before Election Day. Let everybody know how you feel. Some people are going to vote against it. Some people are going to go for it. Will somebody lose their election because they vote for parents?
Yes.
I don't know that too many will. I don't
oh,
know
no,
too
some
many
people will.
Because,
some look, will. Most people don't know a thing about state politics.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
don't know anything
but,
about state politics.
But they'll
politics.
Know about that.
But they'll know about whether
yeah,
they vote.
Yeah, maybe,
to.
Maybe. But you know what? If that's what you believe in, then you should be able to stand up and vote. Anyway, that's not what's been happening. I do agree with the governor and others who have said it. We do need to limit outside income. When I was a legislator, you know, I was an adjunct professor a couple, you know, for whatever, $2,000, you know, for a semester.
At which place?
Hofstra and LAU,
LAU
CW
yeah.
Post.
Mm-hmm.
That was my big outside income, right?
I'm going to start to call you professor.
Well, some people did. You know, so I don't know that you have to say 100% no income, but you certainly should severely limit it. I think the congressional model is not a bad idea. It's like a 15% cap. Well, whatever it is, you know, you saw what happened, particularly in the former speaker's situation, where all this outside income was coming in and obviously led to a conviction there. So I don't know that it's appropriate. It seems to be the battle right now. You have to trade the one for the other. I think the compensation should be looked at as the compensation issue. What is the appropriate level? It would not be unreasonable for that to be considered. But I do think the legislature should move to limit outside income. Disclosure, where they've made some improvements, it would certainly help to be even more full in disclosure. And I have always felt we need to have additional sanctions for public officials, elected officials, who violate their oath of office. We need to have stronger penalties. We need to do more.
Take their pensions away?
That would be one, absolutely. But mm-hmm. also just criminal sanctions in terms of either additional fines or more jail time. So I think it's a combination of more deterrence, limiting outside income, and doing the kind of ethics reforms that we haven't done. But it is not unreasonable after 19 years to say perhaps should they be getting an increase in salary. What that level is, I'll leave it to greater minds to figure out what that should be. But, you know, I do hope this issue gets resolved, because the compensation is not the biggest issue facing New Yorkers. Everyday New Yorkers have much more pressing concerns than how the legislators are being paid. Let's get this one dealt with one way or the other and really focus on issues, especially as we get into an economy that's some troubling signs out there.
Yes.
The revenues coming to the state are not as strong as as strong as they once were. Big spending commitments made, tax cut commitments being made. We're going to have a tough budget year, certainly next year. We don't know the impact of the new federal administration, what that's going to be. Those are the issues that are going to affect the pocketbooks of everyday New Yorkers. That's what the legislature should be focusing on.
I'm glad you mentioned the incoming administration without mentioning the T word, but I will. Donald Trump is going to be the president now, and he's got a place in New York City on Fifth Avenue, which has become the focal point of demonstrations. On the other hand, Trump could, right, either help or hurt New York a great deal, couldn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, let's hope the fact that he knows New York and is a lifelong New Yorker, that's going to help. You know, you take
even though the state overwhelmingly voted against him,
yeah.
You might not forget that. He's a guy who likes to take prisoners, I understand.
Yeah. Well, probably his own election district voted against him, I would think, even in the primary, right? Kasich won his congressional district. Take one of the policy areas he's been talking about, infrastructure. That's been a big issue in New York. We could certainly use greater help from Washington. If he will come up with an infrastructure formula that will benefit our state, that could be a positive. You know, I do worry on the issue of Medicaid, on the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to label it.
And Medicare.
Although Medicare, I would tend to think, you know, even for Trump, will be an area that's not going to touch. But Medicaid, I mean, the Affordable Care Act, where we benefit in terms of money coming in, more people ending up on the rolls. severe changes there with the federal government giving us less, that could blow a hole in our budget, could blow a hole in the Medicaid redesign that's been underway in our state. So I would have a real cautionary word there. And let's keep in mind, Al, it's not just Trump. It's the Congress. You know, what he may propose things, it's the Congress that has to vote on it. You know, we were hoping Chuck Schumer was going to be the Senate Majority Leader. You know, he's the Senate Minority Leader. Can't do as much for New York as Minority Leader as it could as Majority Leader. The House basically stayed the same. I think Democrats picked up a couple of seats. So you've got a leadership in the Senate and the House that certainly cannot be viewed as New York friendly or big state friendly. You know, California, you know, being sure. The other example, given how the voting patterns were. So you could really see congressional action or inaction on certain issues that could disadvantage the Northeast. Look, politics, right? You look at the map from Maine down to Virginia, with the exception of Pennsylvania, but you certainly go along the coast. These were all blue states. So their congressional delegations are, but they're all in the minority. One would think that this administration is going to be more sympathetic to the South, to the West, putting aside the West Coast. And let's see what they do for the Rust Belt states. But the Northeast and New York doesn't figure high in their priorities right now.
Tom DiNapoli, let's talk for a moment about immigration. I know you're the comptroller, and I know that your job is to look and make sure that the tax collections are coming in and what rate and that kind of thing. But what are the fiscal implications of what Trump has promised to do, for example, to Muslims and others?
Well, we put out an immigration report recently. We've done reports on immigration, particularly in New York City, but we did a statewide report. And it's not just in New York City, but across New York, especially in many of our older cities. We announced a report in Utica. It's been the influx of immigrants and refugees that have built up the population base again in many of the cities that were losing population. That translates into political clout, economic activity. We stood with Mayor Rob Palmieri of the city of Utica. The refugees and immigrants that have come in have moved into the neighborhoods where there were many vacant homes, built them back up, tremendous amount of entrepreneurship among immigrant communities. So in fact, it's been a very positive impact of immigration in our state, not just downstate, but really upstate as well, and great variety and diversity of our immigrant populations. So New York has always been a gateway, a pathway for immigrants to come into the American dream, and we benefit from it. So from my point of view, anything that chokes that off is going to be a problem. And immigrants are reflected in all categories of professions and jobs. So sure, some are in unskilled areas. Obviously, agriculture in our state, without immigrants, I don't know how we'd handle the harvest in many parts of our state. But you look at some of the professions in medicine, in those who are accountants, you see a very, very high percentage of immigrants. We found that when you looked at the immigrant population in New York, it tracked very favorably, in fact, some cases higher than native-born population in terms of participation in the workforce, in terms of...
What does that mean, participation in the workforce?
Working, getting jobs, you know, being willing to work.
A larger percent of immigrants.
Yeah, slightly larger percentage when you look overall, contrary to what some people, you know, might assume. In many of our colleges, a big percentage are immigrants or the children of immigrants. Again, I'll mention Utica because we were there. When you add in the immigrants and refugees that have settled there and their children, the firstborn in this country, it's about 24% of the population of the city of Utica. So it's really keeping communities like Utica alive. If we have a negative message out there, let alone legal sanctions, that might send some people back, I think it's going to have a very negative consequence on our state.
Tom DiNapoli, one of the things that we're keeping a sharp eye out on, and it's very disturbing to me, and I suspect to you, you know, I'm, third generation? My father actually came over, but his parents and my mother's parents, and you have Italian background,
yep.
But there's real hate speech going on now of the kind that we saw back in the day. And bullying is on the rise, we know that, and cemeteries are being defaced with swastikas and the rest. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it's ugly. I mean, it's not the first time it's happened. Whether this is just a temporary letting off of some steam, I don't know. There was a demonization of the other, like we hadn't seen. However you want to define the other, right? It was defined in many different ways. But I think we all need to dial it back a little bit. And very easy to criticize some of those who particularly were on the other political side in this last battle on some of these issues. But I think even for my side, you know, one of the phrases that always kind of bothered me when some folks kept talking about, well, you know, it's the uneducated that are supporting, you know, Donald Trump. It became a pejorative and a label in many ways. And, you know, I read an article recently with a very interesting notion that while on the one side, you know, the Democrats were appropriately, I think, celebrating diversity and all the different groups and subgroups that want to be, we want to include in the American, tapestry, part of the reaction to that was some other folks, perhaps, had been labeled the uneducated, you know, the white disadvantaged folks started saying, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm a group too now. And so you saw this strange, you know, reaction to all of this, particularly in places like Wisconsin and Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, that hadn't been expected. Maybe it's time for us all to step back and do a little less of the labeling, recognize that wherever we came from, we are all part of the American scene. None of us are going anywhere. And we need to, you know, we need to start talking to each other more. You know, one of the things I said, I had a chance to speak at one of the breakfasts at the convention in Philadelphia, where we were very charged up and we were, you know, united, and Sanders was there for Hillary and Hillary did a great job and Obama and all that. And I said, you know, we were really celebratory, really feel we were on the verge of a great victory for Hillary Clinton. But one of the things I said at the breakfast, my concern is that we spend a lot of time talking to ourselves. And one of the lessons for folks like me of this election is that there are a lot of other folks out there that have a very different worldview, have a very different sense about where this country is at and where it's headed. And that's unfortunate. I wish I could have perhaps engaged some of them and explained to them why supporting Hillary Clinton made more sense to get us to a better place. What we all need to do right now is dial it back and get back to a focus on what this country really needs. We clearly have severe economic issues that have continued to plague many, many people who feel very, very left out. And that's true in our own state as well. Now, you know, I live downstate. Downstate perhaps is doing better, but there's still a lot of poor people when you walk the streets of New York City. And a lot of folks even come in here to do your show on State Street, my office in Albany. More people on the street begging for money than I've seen in a number of years. We know the unemployment issue in many of our upstate communities is real and severe. And you go to other states and you have the same issue. At the same time, we are living in a very dangerous geopolitical situation with the world. A lot of folks that are out to get us. America needs to be united. I thought it was going to be united under a positive message that I heard Hillary Clinton putting forward. What those of us who are on the losing side now have to recognize is that, first of all, we lost. Doesn't mean we give up. There are more battles. And, you know, I think ultimately the Democrats are going to come back and come back strong. But we have to be smart about it. And we have to start not just talking to ourselves and just bemoaning the fact that we lost. We really need to look. A lot of the people who either stayed home or voted for Trump in Wisconsin, in Michigan, in Pennsylvania, those are people who voted for Democrats before. We lost them. And that's a scary notion to me. And even when we look at our own state of New York, how much of upstate New York was very, very red. You know, we've really got to figure out what it is as Democrats that we're missing out on. We should not, we became viewed as the party of the elite, right? The West Coast, the East Coast elites. That's not what the Democrat, that's not my Democratic Party. We've got to do, I think, some real soul searching, better job of messaging, and having answers to some of the challenges that people are feeling. People are hurting out there, and they saw Donald Trump as, if not the savior to their problems, at least the one who expressed their anger. And this, elect, you know, I'll end on my little speech here on this thought. I've often said, you know, Democrats win when people vote their hopes. Republicans win when people vote their fears. Trump has created a new dynamic. People voted for him out of anger. It wasn't out of fear, and certainly wasn't out of hope. It was out of anger. This is a new dynamic that I'm not familiar with. You know, I remember when Nixon won. Remember when Reagan won. I didn't like those outcomes. We survived it, so I assume we're going to survive, you know, Trump as well. But Trump was not Nixonian, wasn't Reagan-esque. He was his own brand. And this is a new dynamic that we've got to figure out.
Tom DiNapoli, a very happy Thanksgiving to you and yours and your staff and your family. And thanks for being here with us. We love it when you come in and talk to us.
Thanks, Alan. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.